To begin again in love. What an invitation. There are a lot of transitions and beginnings this week. It seems fitting that the air has a different quality, that the light is shifting, that the leaves on some trees are beginning to turn yellow, red, orange, and brown. Change is happening. This week has included Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, Muharram, the Muslim New Year, and the fall equinox. These are thresholds in time. And for many people here and around the world, it is time to consider what to bring across the threshold into what comes next. What might it look like for each of us to begin again in love? Several summers ago, Wendy and I served as chaplains in the county hospital in Oakland. Highland Hospital provides care for anyone who comes through their doors, regardless of whether they have identification, insurance, or the ability to pay. It is often an intense place to be, and the level of suffering can be acute. Yet some folks there, including those whose stories are quite long and full of pain, have found a way to continue moving through the world without the weight of suffering holding them down. It was impressive. While in seminary, we took a course on forgiveness with Reverend Chris Fry. And during that class, I read and heard stories of people who had forgiven horrible atrocities. And I came to believe that while not everything needs to be forgiven, that there isn't anything that someone somewhere wouldn't choose to forgive. More importantly, I came to see a deep connection between forgiveness and healing from suffering. Forgiveness is a compact and complex idea, and so it's important to state what is and isn't meant by this concept. The American Psychological Association says that forgiveness is a mental and/or spiritual process of releasing resentment, hurt, indignation, or anger against another person for a perceived offense. Difference, or mistake. Buddhist teacher Jack Kornfield says that forgiveness is giving up hope of a better past. Forgiveness is a choice and is not inherently moral or honorable. It is not more ethical to forgive than to not. And forgiveness does not mean forgetting. We can forgive and still believe that an action was or is harmful and needs to be addressed. Forgiveness is not possible as long as the violations and injury occur. It is a very personal act. One can only forgive. One cannot forgive for others, only for oneself. It does not imply reconciliation, which may require much more than forgiveness. And of great importance to me, particularly in seeing forgiveness as a spiritual practice, is that it can be a way to loosen the hold of previous suffering and to prevent further harm. Let's go back to that idea that forgiveness does not mean forgetting. Memory is a truly remarkable thing. There are lots of things that happened last week that I can't remember, while some events from years ago are still very, very vivid. When a tree falls into a river and decays, the hardest part of the wood lasts the longest. These are the points at which a limb grew out from the trunk, a place of change and intersection. If you're walking in a river, sometimes you can find these river teeth. They look like finger or combs, and they've been sculpted but not destroyed by years of rushing water. They are like long-lasting memories, the pivotal moments that stick in our minds, even when the details of other events have faded. One of my river teeth is the night my mother died in the spring of 2000. She had been diagnosed with lung cancer, most likely from exposure to clay and glaze dust from her work with ceramics. 5 weeks later, she was in a bed set up in the family room so that she could see the garden, not eating, morphine for pain, with friends and family having come by during the day to say goodbye. It all felt surreal. The details from that night are very clear. The smell of flowers in the vase on the table. Hearing my father tell her that it was okay to go. Watching the clock click past midnight on their 45th wedding anniversary. The sound of her labored breathing, singing softly in the darkened room. The sadness on my sister's faces and the feel of the grass on my bare feet as I clipped a rose from her garden to accompany her body. These are details that are associated with grief, with loss, as well as connection to family. A memory that has caused me a great deal of pain from that evening is the sound of my then husband's snoring as he lay drunk and passed out, unable to be present. Forgiveness has not come easily. Forgiveness is not about forgetting. It is about remembering and finding different meaning. So I would tell someone, wrote Professor Chris Fry, I would never tell someone or try to persuade them that forgiving meant also forgetting. But what I would share now, after more years and a few more traumas healed, is that there is a way in which forgiveness and healing allows one to put a particular painful incident in perspective, of reducing the pain from the memory. She continues, at the beginning, there is a way in which pain from abuse, from a lost relationship, from an illness, etc., can be a defining force in one's life. We become the abuse victim, the cancer, the widow or the widower. But it is possible sometimes, even at that moment, to remember that we are something more than that particular pain. That we are, for example, not only a cancer patient, but a parent, a gardener, a writer, jester, dog lover, etc. This helps us to live with the pain, but not be held captive by it. Forgiveness is a means of stopping the iteration of harm. Our brains are constantly making meaning from the input that they receive. Our brains like nothing better than to attempt to make sense of the world around us and within us. If your stomach rumbles, your brain may decide this means you are hungry. And depending on your current health, your relationship to food, whether or not there is food available to you, and whether or not you are fasting, you will layer on more meaning. When we think or feel or remember, neurons in the brain send impulses to other neurons. Memories are created by strengthening the connections between concurrently firing neurons. When we respond strongly to an event, we play it over and over in our minds, retelling the story each time, causing the same chain of neurons to fire. This happens in repeating patterns, and like water running down a hillside, it creates synaptic pathways that become worn and familiar. These paths make it easy for some neurons to get triggered and less likely that others will. For instance, when hungry, you'll probably think about the refrigerator or the locavore lunch, the pantry shelves, and not the washing machine. Some of those neurons are connected with emotional responses, which release chemicals into the brain and other parts of the body. Our heart rate increases just from the memory of anxiety, even if the original cause is no longer present. Memories are powerful things. The beginning of transformation out of suffering is telling the truth of our experiences, yet it cannot be the end. If we continue to tell the same story in the same way, blaming the king once again, as in our story this morning, whether we're saying it out loud or just playing it over in our heads, we will end up with the same familiar response, one that causes pain. Our brain doesn't know the difference between emotions that are happening in response to something in the present or in the past. If we want to relieve the suffering and not continue to reiterate harm, there's a need to create new pathways in the brain that do not end with the same pain and the same powerlessness. These new messages rewire the microscopic structures of the brain, transforming us from who we were into who we are. We can create new meaning from our stories. Forgiveness is a tool for creating new meaning. As a young girl, Eva Kaur and her twin sister were victims of Joseph Mengele's horrific experiments, surgeries, and tests while being held in Auschwitz. The pain, fear, and powerlessness shaped much of their lives. Her sister Miriam died of kidney problems, likely a result of the chemicals that had been injected by Nazi doctors. Eva wanted to reclaim the right to live freely. In a very controversial act, she publicly forgave Dr. Mengele and those who worked with him, saying that what has been done to me no longer has the power to keep me from doing what I want. This forgiveness was not a one-time proclamation. It came after years of living with the memories, of flinching whenever she heard the sound of the German language, of hiding parts of her history and then trying to piece together what had happened to them. It came after publicly speaking about the truth of Auschwitz and from the determination to not forget. There was a power in claiming the right to forgive, she said. There were survivors who were angry, saying she didn't have the right to forgive. They were hearing her words as speaking for them as well. It was hard to tell whether they were more upset, whether she would consider forgiving at all, or that she would implicate them in a forgiveness that they did not feel. In later public statements, she clarified that she was speaking for the only person for whom she could, herself. Other survivors were angry, saying she couldn't speak for God. Forgiveness is not the same as absolution. If we can only forgive for ourselves, how can we forgive for the divine? I don't pretend to know what God will forgive or if divine forgiveness is even needed. I do know that for Eva Kaur and for many other people whose life experiences I have heard or read, forgiveness has been a means to untangle the pain of their past and liberate their present and future. The stories that we tell are critical to our being able to uncover, to recover, and to heal from past injuries that we, our families, and our communities have suffered. This doesn't mean that we must forget or not tell the stories, but new language opens up possibilities for different emotions to come through. For 8 years, when I recalled the night my mother died, my stomach hurt. My throat would tighten, and my mind would fill with, "He should have been there. He should have been there." During a journal writing exercise in the forgiveness class, I changed one word in this mantra. "He could have been there." Both sentences hold truth. And the "should" kept me from letting go. It allowed me to cling tightly to wanting a different past. And it kept the same painful neurons firing. As I breathed into the truth of "he could have been there," my body softened. I began to forgive. Forgiveness is not something that we can put on a to-do list and check off. Sorry. It is a process. First, we must decide if we even want to forgive. Sometimes it isn't desirable. There is power in forgiving as well as in choosing not to. Forgiveness is not the goal. Decreasing suffering is the goal. If we push ourselves or others into forgiveness as though it is required, we are just perpetuating further acts of harm. When forgiveness is viewed as a tool, not a choice, not an expectation, it becomes even more powerful. Knowing that it is a choice and that forgiveness must be done with intention is part of what makes it a spiritual act for many of us. At times, this practice has felt like spiritual weeding, pulling out the resentments that are choking the things that I want to flourish. It takes time to get all the grasses and vines that grow so quickly. Other times I realize that what might be called a weed is actually part of a healthy spiritual garden, and that my desire to remove it has come from my discomfort with anger. I try and rename it a weed. I certainly don't always do forgiveness well. I have felt the energy that is required to create what Dr. Fred Luskin calls grievance stories, resentments and hurt that one retells and relives, often with unequal energy to the good in one's life. I've had well-meaning friends encourage me to tell these stories again and again until they have become all too familiar and comfortable. It can be risky to let these stories go or to tell them in new ways, especially when they become part of our identity. It can be harder if it is a shared grievance story, as others are also invested in it. I do not offer forgiveness lightly. Episcopal priest and feminist Carter Hayward writes, "Forgiveness is a social, political, and psycho-spiritual leap out of the past toward the future. It is a passage through obsessions with wrongs done. Even in small ways, It is a radical political act because it is the work of justice love. This radical personal act is a means of decreasing suffering. It is a process that actually creates new patterns in our brains. Forgiveness requires truth-telling, which increases the likelihood of accountability, restorative justice, and the healing of relationships. Forgiveness can be a spiritual act of empowerment. Let us continue to turn toward one another, to risk truth-telling, to find new meaning, to experience release, and to begin again in love. Amen. Amin. Salam. Shalom. And blessed be.